Hey everyone, it's Carney Ann Nasser. Today is Wednesday, June the 17th. I hope that you are healthy and safe wherever you're tuning in from in the world today. It's super humbling to me that this podcast now has listeners in 19 countries. I wanted to bring you my recent radio and television interviews about Tiger King, about the Animal Welfare Act and the Endangered Species Act, and awesome litigation that's being undertaken to change the legal landscape for big cats in the United States. So rather than bringing those to you piecemeal, I did a mashup so that you're going to get three of my recent interviews all in one place in this podcast episode. So check it out. Let me know what you think. Don't forget, you can always reach me at info@carneyannnasser.com, or you can find me on my website at carneyannnasser.com.
The true crime documentary Tiger King on Netflix was watched by 34 million people in the first 10 days after it was released, making it one of the most popular series of all times. It was about this little known area in the world, the life of a zookeeper, Joe Exotic, and people who collect animals and have these little roadside zoos that we're going to talk about. Joe Exotic was accused and convicted of exploiting wild animals and also plotting to kill another conservationist who campaigned against him. He's sentenced to 22 years in prison. And I want to talk a little bit about why. Can you buy a tiger? Can you imagine? You can buy a tiger cub for as little as $2,000. Why was this guy allowed to run this roadside zoo with what seemed like no regulation by the government? And are there laws, and why aren't there laws to protect these beautiful, wonderful animals? Joining us is really the foremost expert in the country on this topic. Carney Ann Nasser serves as the director and assistant clinical professor of animal welfare at Michigan State College of Law. She runs Claws Consulting and has a great podcast called Tiger Talk. Welcome to the show, Carney. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me.
So excited to talk about this topic because it's just fascinating. And let me at first ask you, how were you involved in the Joe Exotic thing at all in any way, shape, or form?
I was the attorney who pitched the wildlife trafficking case to federal prosecutors against him. So the murder for hire thing didn't happen until after the case I pitched was already under investigation for a couple of years. He was charged with multiple counts of illegal trafficking. He was charged with multiple counts of illegally killing tigers in violation of the Endangered Species Act, and that had already been underway. I was pretty neck deep in it, actually.
So, you know, being involved in the animal law world, as I assume you are, you knew about Joe Exotic. You knew about what he was doing there, and people in that milieu knew what he was doing. Is that right?
So Joe Exotic has long been, you know, at the top of the list of the most notorious abusers and exploiters of big cats in the country. So, you know, he all of the things that made for a great reality show that a lot of people wanted to watch during quarantine were the things that we had already known about, been accustomed to for a long time. And I tell people, I live in New Orleans, and, you know, after you've seen the person who's painted themselves head to toe in gold body paint and is singing on top of a chair on Bourbon Street, there's no wow factor left anymore. And the same is true for Joe Exotic. We've been after him for a long, long time.
So, you know, Chicago here has two world-class zoos. We have Brookfield Zoo. I grew up very close. I could almost hear, when the wind was blowing right, you could hear some of the noises from the animals. And then we have Lincoln Park Zoo, another beautiful city zoo. And I had never heard of a roadside zoo. I mean, I never understood that someone could just open up a zoo without having certain regulations. Now, tell me, are there now regulations that would prohibit a Joe Exotic from acquiring big, beautiful animals and putting them in a zoo?
A roadside zoo is like a menagerie of animals kept by unqualified people who just collected animals and decide they want to open their doors and charge a fee. Anybody can get a USDA license, which is a license from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which is the threshold entry point in order to exhibit animals to the public. And the application fee is $30. So, wow. that is really what it takes to open a roadside zoo, is to pass a pre-license inspection, know that you're probably only going to be subject to about one inspection per year. The USDA is very understaffed. It's notorious even in its own internal auditing department for failing to enforce the applicable regulations, which are very, very low standards of care, like do the animals have water, do they have food, do they get veterinary care, do they have enough space to stand up, turn around, and lie down. And that's the threshold, you know. And so, for example, in a state like Illinois, the law states that, you know, there can't be any private ownership of these dangerous exotic animals. And that sounds great. It sounds like a prohibition, but it's not really in practice, because all it requires to circumvent that prohibition is to get that USDA license, tell the federal agency that you have some future plan to exhibit animals to the public, pay your $30, pass your initial inspection, and rock and roll, and just keep those animals as pets. So, there are a lot of loopholes in existing laws. I'm not just pinpointing Illinois, but in fact, there are four states that don't have any regulations whatsoever. The existing federal laws are fraught with loopholes that are really easy to circumvent. And that's why we've seen this proliferation of roadside menageries that can operate, and the proliferation of tigers in particular.
I want to go back to this issue of the laws and changing the laws and all of that. But and you're telling me, you pay your $30 and you go through these preliminary steps and you can get a baby tiger. I mean, if I wanted to do that, Carney, if I just said, okay, I really like these cute little tigers, my house pets from the DuPage Animal Shelter are just not doing it for me, and I go and I qualify and I get all, where do I go, and how much do I have to pay to get a tiger cub, and how hard would it be for me to do that?
You may have paid more in your tax-deductible donation to the shelter for your rescue dog than you'd have to pay to get a tiger. You know, I know that, like, I paid a $250 donation to the shelter where I rescued my grumpy old Shih Tzu 14 years ago. You can get a tiger for a couple hundred bucks or even free.
Really?
And it's as simple as looking on the internet or using this network of roadside zoos that are going to dump animals once they become too big, and once they reach past that threshold age where they can no longer be used for the extremely lucrative cub handling, called pay-to-play, photo ops, bottle feeding, even swim with tigers experiences that the roadside zoos love to do because they're so lucrative. Once they're done with them, those animals are just financial and safety liabilities, and that's when they get dumped into the exotic pet trade. So up until recently, there was a classified publication. It was a monthly publication, very mom-and-pop type of thing. Anybody could subscribe to it, and you would see listings every single month. It was like want ads. It was exotic animal auctions. It was roadside zoos looking for or looking to dump animals, whether they're tigers, lions, bears, monkeys, other primates, zebras, giraffes, you name it, you could find it in the Animal Finder's Guide.
Unbelievable. I'm going to give out our numbers here. If anyone has a question for Carney, give us a call here, 312-981-7200. And can you give our listeners your podcast information if you're interested in this topic? And listen, I think this whole issue has just sparked an interest in this topic in a way that I think is good for the cause, but is also fascinating. So, Carney, how could people listen to your Tiger Talk podcast?
Tiger Talk with Carney Ann Nassar is available on Spotify and on Anchor. And I take listeners into on a deep dive into the the bizarre subculture of exotic animal ownership with a focus on big cats. And I talk to real documentary filmmakers who focus on this issue for years. I talk to zoologists and big cat behaviorists, accredited sanctuary founders. I talk to animal protection attorneys who are litigating precedent-setting cases all over the country to change the legal landscape for captive tigers. There's some really great, compelling conversations in there. So I encourage people who are interested to check it out. I'm excited that we're now at listeners in 19 countries, which is super cool.
Wonderful. And one more question before we go to a break, and we're going to come back, 981-7200 if you want to talk animal law with Carney Naceris. Is there anything good about these roadside zoos? I mean, when I was watching Tiger King, part of it that I kind of appealed to me was all these kids who came in, and they were able to handle the cubs, and they were able to learn a little bit about the animals. And, what I was hoping was that they were going to develop some sort of affection for animals and hopefully support the humane treatment of animals when they're adults because of this connection. Is there any of that goes on in these roadside zoos, or is it all bad?
It's all bad. And you know what? I'm a mom. I've got three kids who are 6, 10, and 13. We don't need to teach children how to think compassionately about animals. In fact, we could learn a little bit more from them and listening to them. They're innately concerned with the care of other animals. Exploitation and teaching them that these animals are available to be used as our whims, that's deconditioning them from the natural state of compassion that they already have. It's teaching them that other beings, and there are studies on this, that suggest when you see a big cat used in a circus, or passed around for photo ops, or used in an unnatural setting, like a tiger in a play area or for swim with tigers experience, is actually sending the message that these animals aren't actually that endangered in the wild because they're so readily available down the street at your local roadside zoo. So it's really, really sending the wrong message to kids. It does nothing for conservation. It's entirely exploitative and feeding the exotic pet trade. There's no redeeming quality to a roadside zoo. The only good roadside zoo is a closed roadside zoo.
That's Carney Naceris talking about Tiger King. We're going to come back and talk more about animals and the law and what you can do if you're interested in this topic and you feel strongly about it like I do. You're listening to The Karen Conti Show on WGN. We're talking to Carney Ann Naceris, who's the director and assistant clinical professor of the Animal Welfare Clinic at Michigan State University College of Law. And she is one of the lawyers who actually helped the prosecution of Joe Exotic. If you saw Tiger King, you know who I'm talking about. And if you haven't seen it, you might want to see it because it is really very, very interesting. Welcome back, Carney. Thank you for joining me. I want to talk a little bit, I want to go back to the law in a minute. But I have to gossip with you a little bit. Since you're part of the community here of big cat legislation and laws and these roadside zoos, and you're kind of on the in here, Joe Exotic was convicted of attempting to murder for hire of Carol Baskin, who is another conservationist who was involved and was also in this Netflix series. What do you know? Is there any inside story about, was he really trying to kill her, and what's the story with her? Is she a person that is respected in the community, the animal rights community?
So I'll try to answer, I'll try to remember all those questions and answer them one at a time.
Sorry about that.
Joe, that's okay. So Joe had made it very clear that he was obsessed with killing Carol. This has been years of this. He was live on Facebook every day. He was doing all kinds of videos where he would threaten her. He would have effigies of her. He would put a gun to that. He'd say, I'm going to cap her ass. He was obsessed with killing her. There's a reason why federal court found him guilty of those two charges, those two separate charges of murder for hire. The evidence was overwhelming. So this is a man who was completely obsessed with killing her after, hijacking her trademark logo to try to pass off his completely abusive and exploitative entertainment business as was affiliated with her reputable accredited sanctuary. She got $1 million judgment against him, and that set him off into this obsession about her. So that's something that's been known about Joe for a long time. I sit on the board of advisors of the Big Cat Sanctuary Alliance. The Big Cat Rescue Sanctuary is accredited by the Global Federation of Animal Sanctuaries. This is the highest level of accreditation for a captive setting that exists. And Carol has been at the forefront of lobbying for the Big Cat Public Safety Act, which would end the private ownership of big cats, which would end this lucrative but very exploitative and abusive cub petting industry, and really put a nail in the coffin on this reckless, constant breed and dump cycle for big cats that we see here in the United States. You know, being quirky is not a crime. I know Carol and her husband Howard quite well, and they have put themselves on the line at the forefront of this issue for many, many years.
Well, now that you mentioned this potential law, tell me, it's sort of like, you know, when people say, I'm against animal abuse. It's like, who isn't? I mean, I'm in favor of animal abuse. I mean, who is against these laws? I mean, if it were hunting, you know, because I know there are hunters out there who like to go do big game hunting in different places in the world, and they bring back their rhinoceros horns and all of that stuff, you know, and I don't like that. I don't think it should happen. But if they, you know, I understand that drive, I guess, that they have. But who's in favor of this? Are there people in Washington who are standing up and saying, no, we want to keep these roadside? And are they paying money to lobby? I mean, tell me how this is working out politically.
So the Big Cat Public Safety Act actually has broad bipartisan support. And you're correct. I mean, the Gallup polls show that, I believe it's over 97% of Americans believe that animals should be protected from cruel treatment, believe that there should be laws in place to punish people for treating animals cruelly. And so that, with that being said, anybody who has a clear understanding of what a roadside zoo is, what cub petting is, 97% would be against roadside zoos and against cub petting, and would be in favor of passing the Big Cat Public Safety Act. It's just common sense for animal welfare and public safety, too. We're talking about apex predators and public contact. So it's really a no-brainer once people understand the issue wholly, when they understand that cubs are ripped away from their mothers immediately upon birth, when the whole cycle is repeated, when cats are declawed frequently, not by veterinarians. It's still a violation of the Federal Animal Welfare Act. It's still a federal legal violation to declaw a big cat. But they're frequently declawed with a hammer and pliers. Some of these cats die. They're not provided with veterinary care. And the ones who survive are crippled for life. They're in chronic pain. It permanently affects the way they walk. And this is all just to make them, you know, more easily handleable for these lucrative photo ops. So, you know, they spend their lives in cages. We're talking about wide-ranging apex predators. And it's true that no habitat is big enough. But if you ask any reputable and accredited sanctuary founder what their goal is, it's to go out of business. But the only reason that they have to be here is because of exploitative abusers like Joe Exotic, who want to continue to profit off of the abuse of big cats and then dump them when they're done using them.
If people are angry about the fact that there isn't a law that does what you're asking the law to do, how would they talk to a senator or a congressman? Who would they contact?
They should contact their federal legislators and ask them to co-sponsor the Big Cat Public Safety Act.
That's simple enough, the Big Cat Safety Act, and it seems like a no-brainer. So you're teaching a Tiger King, a law class up in Michigan State Law School. Are you getting a lot of interest from students these days because of the Tiger King?
Well, what I have been doing, I designed a course relating to Tiger King and the law. So a law school class, an upper-level class, that dives into wildlife trafficking, the Endangered Species Act, intellectual property, even the murder for hire issues, a lot of these federal legal violations that were highlighted in the prosecution against Joe Exotic, as well as the Federal Animal Welfare Act. I mean, there were 4 open investigations into Joe Exotic by the USDA for a number of chronic violations of federal law. So there's so many different things going on here. It provides a really great real-life case to unpack the interplay of applicable state and federal laws and regulations. So this is a course that I'm offering to any law school. This isn't specifically something that's going to be at Michigan State. In fact, I'm wrapping up my final semester since I've been commuting between my home in New Orleans and East Lansing. And so I'm, for all intents and purposes, about to venture out just purely as an independent consultant and teaching. I've done a lot of courses for big law firms on this issue, and just, you know, a lot of schools who are in universities that are interested. So, you know, it's fascinating stuff for everybody, even if it's not their specific practice area or what their career is focused on.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing the movie that's going to come out. And I, of all people to play Joe Exotic, it's going to be Nicolas Cage, which you couldn't get a guy with a better name than Nicolas Cage to play Joe Exotic, which is a little bit of irony.
But, true that.
Yeah. Carney, thank you so much for joining us. Carney Ann Naceris, who has a podcast called Tiger Talk. Where can we hear your podcast, Carney?
My podcast is on Anchor and on Spotify. You can also find me on my website. It's just Carney Ann Nasser, NASSER.com.
Thank you so much for joining us, and keep up the good work.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a great night.
Okay, you too.
So, you know, I'm the attorney who pitched the wildlife trafficking case against Joe Exotic, and that was in the works. The investigation has been in the works since I met with federal prosecutors several years ago, so about 4 years ago, and before the whole murder for hire thing happened. So yeah, I've been immersed in this for several years now. When Tiger King came out, the content is Jerry Springer, reality show, just contrived, misleading, false narrative. So, however, it has created an opportunity for those of us in the field to redirect the conversation to the very important issue of trafficking in tigers here in the United States. So while the content is obscene, grotesque, contrived, it still has presented an opportunity. And that's why I caution activists, stop complaining about Tiger King and start creating content and having conversations that are factual, productive, compelling, and helpful to the issue.
Have you caught the ear of Congress this time? Are they paying attention to the legislation that's been sitting there a long time? I mean, the argument is pretty simple. No one should have tigers in their backyard.
No, and no one should be allowed to take a photo with a tiger, and no one should be allowed to swim with a tiger or take selfies for their dating profile with a tiger. And these are two things that the Big Cat Public Safety Act would prohibit across the board, establish the well-needed uniformity of law that's been sorely lacking here in the United States, and really provide a nail in the coffin to this rapid breed and dump puppy mill style breeding of big cats in the United States. So I believe that we do have the ear of Congress. It has broad bipartisan support, and it's something that's common sense for public safety, animal welfare, and conservation of big cats. It's a no-brainer.
You know, the series did get into some of the issues that you've been dealing with a long time. But how preposterous it is to have big cats, and how dangerous it is. How dangerous it is for humans, and how bad it is for these animals.
It did. You know, it touched on some issues. There was one frame that touched on the issue of the way that roadside zoos yank brand new, just born tigers away from their mothers, even through the cage, in order to start habituating them to human contact. You know, these cats are used for up to 60 photo ops a day at a price range of anywhere from $50 to over $1,000. And they can churn out up to $1 million for their owners during their short period of time where they can legally be used for public contact. So that was demonstrated very, very briefly for people who were even paying close enough attention to notice that. But yeah, it did touch on also the public safety issue at play. One of Joe Exotic's employees had their arm ripped off. Joe himself has been attacked. This happens even in the accredited zoological institutions. That even the experts get killed. Certainly the roadside zoo owners and the fly-by-night pet owners don't have any business keeping a tiger on their property. Terry Thompson had about 5 dozen dangerous wild animals, many big cats, and he had been in prison. And he had said while he was in prison, when I get out, I'm releasing my animals and I'm going to kill myself. And he made good on that promise. The writing was already on the wall. He released them out into the community, put law enforcement officers in an impossible situation, and forced them to slaughter as many animals as they could find. Very few were ultimately, sadly. Yeah, it's terrible. It's a terrible tragedy, but it's, we have deaths from big cat attacks every year in this country. Under the Federal Animal Welfare Act, it's only legal for roadside zoos to offer big cats for photo ops between approximately 8 and 12 weeks of age. Now, we know, based on federal records, that exhibitors love to push the limits and take risk of getting excited by offering them and offering them even well beyond the 12 weeks to get as much profit out of them as possible before they become just a financial drain. I mean, it costs $10,000 a year just to feed a tiger. So if you can't use them for photo ops anymore, then they're just a safety problem. So liability from a safety standpoint and from a financial standpoint. So we saw with Joe Exotic, one of his answers to creating room for more animals was to just shoot them. We also seen him selling these animals as pets. And there's a real concern that animals who have been bred in roadside zoos will end up even on the exotic parts market. That's a finding that's been made by Traffic, which is the leading wildlife trafficking watchdog group. So these are all very, very serious concerns. These animals can be sold as pets, they can be shuffled between facilities. And because of defects in state and federal laws, they fall into a virtual black hole where it's very difficult to find out exactly what happens to them. First of all, I think a lot of Nevadans would be shocked to find out that Nevada is one of only 4 states that has refused to institute common sense safety and animal welfare oversight to limit the ability of people like Carl Mitchell to own big cats. So, you know, the state, along with Wisconsin, Alabama, and North Carolina, not just to call out Nevada, has some work to do in order to prevent future people like Carl Mitchell from getting their hands on apex predators as pets. Carl Mitchell's history of animal abuse and disregard for the law and law enforcement goes back decades. You know, his federal license to exhibit animals was permanently revoked in 2001, in part for his withholding of water as a training technique with young big cats. And once, you know, when the USDA actually takes some action, they very rarely take that extreme action. It means they've found something very, very, very serious, that somebody chronically fails and refuses to adhere to the most low threshold, low bar standards of care for animals. He has disregarded numerous USDA cease and desist orders. He has disregarded numerous orders for him to pay civil penalties. And the the USDA has not done anything to follow up on its own orders. The Department of Justice has not done anything yet to follow up on his own apparent trafficking of tigers from Oklahoma. So there are some federal agencies that bear some responsibility in failing to take meaningful enforcement action to hold him accountable for his chronic flagrant violations of the law.
There's no question that Carl Mitchell and Joe Exotic did business in
Oh, I've seen the paperwork. There's no question. I've seen the paperwork. I have the paperwork.
Do you know how many I know there are three, five, something?
I've seen at least three tigers. I've also seen other animals. There were some, random other animals in there. I think a dog, maybe a wolf, but there's some other random animals in the paperwork. I'd have to take a look back at the records, but yeah, it's there. There's an Oklahoma. I mean, this is information that is available publicly to anybody who wants to submit a public records request to the Oklahoma Department of Agriculture. And that's how I got those records.
Those guys, there's a circle of those guys who all deal in animals like some illegal commodity.
Yeah, as I attended Joe Exotic's sentencing hearing in January in Oklahoma City, and the judge described his operation as systematic trafficking in big cats. The judge also called him a master manipulator. And sadly, I think that Tiger King and the makers of Tiger King were too happy to assist Joe in manipulating viewers just to make money off of a reality show.
Carl Mitchell continues to traffic in these animals. He continues to post celebrity photos. He allows people to come and see the animals at his facility. He takes them across state lines, uses them in photo shoots. I just can't understand how he continues to be able to flaunt the law and get away with it. Not only federal law, but state, local, as weak as they may be, he does not seem to care what the law says.
Yeah, he doesn't care. But even more concerningly, the federal agencies that are supposed to be overseeing and ensuring the humane care and treatment of animals and protecting and conserving tigers are apparently asleep at the wheel. And that's why we need the Big Cat Public Safety Act to really make a very clear prohibition across the country in all 50 states, uniformity of law, that would end operators and bad actors like Carl Mitchell, because he's not eligible to get another USDA license ever again. His wife, Kayla, is not eligible to get a USDA license as long as she's married to him. So this is, why the Big Cat Public Safety Act. I mean, it's people like Carl Mitchell who are one of the poster child for why we need the Big Cat Public Safety Act, because that would provide an enforcement mechanism for us to put somebody like that out of business who just doesn't care and is going to continue to flout and in the face of federal agencies that really are derelict in their duty. The USDA has been criticized over and over and over again by its own internal auditing department for failing to enforce the Animal Welfare Act. It's pretty grotesque.
Roy Horn, who was one half of America's most famous tiger magic act, Siegfried and Roy, died of coronavirus over the weekend. In 2003, Horn was nearly mauled to death on stage by one of the duo's famed Royal White Tigers. Their Las Vegas act helped to perpetuate the myth that white tigers are an exotic subspecies, when in fact, all white tigers are the result of inbreeding in captivity. They and other captive tigers are so plentiful in the United States, they now far outnumber tigers actually found in the wild. A major reason for that is a loophole in U.S. law that allowed people to breed and sell tigers with very little oversight for nearly 20 years. Carney Ann Nassar is on the line to explain how tiger breeding, like the outfits shown in the salacious Netflix show Tiger King, came to be so common in America. Nassar is an expert in animal welfare at Michigan State University's College of Law. Professor Nassar, thanks for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
All tiger species, as I understand it, are listed as endangered species under the U.S. Endangered Species Act. So how are any of these tiger magic acts or private petting zoos even in operation at all?
Well, the problem has been that the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which regulates and oversees commercial exhibitions of animals like tigers or elephants in circuses, has really failed at enforcing the Federal Animal Welfare Act. And rather than doing its job of ensuring the humane care and treatment of animals like it is supposed to do per congressional mandate, it has actually contributed to the abuse and exploitation of animals, particularly tigers in this case, by incentivizing rapid puppy mill style breeding for cub petting, bottle feeding, magic shows, circuses, and all of these entertainment type of acts that fundamentally abuse animals.
Now, this incentive you're referring to, as I understand it, was kind of an unintended consequence, a loophole that was created that tiger breeders captured, glommed onto, and were able to take advantage of. So describe for us, first of all, what kinds of tiger prior, you know, the loophole has since been closed a couple of years ago, but at the time that the loophole was in effect, what was the USSDA concerned about? What kinds of tigers were you not allowed to breed and sell?
So just to clarify, there are actually two loopholes. One is a creation of U.S. Department of Agriculture with the Animal Welfare Act, and one is a creation of U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service with the Endangered Species Act.
Oh, interesting.
That's the one we call the generic tiger loophole.
Okay.
The two of those have operated in tandem to create a perfect storm.
Okay, let's not go any further. Explain the loopholes for us. Let's start with what you just called the generic tiger loophole. What is that?
So like you said, all tigers are listed on the Endangered Species Act. They're all protected from illegal harm, ostensibly, under the act. However, between 1998 and 2016, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service decided they were going to take a step back from overseeing the commercial transfers of tigers unless they were purebred. So that incentivized breeders like Siegfried and Roy, who you just mentioned, to crossbreed and create hybrid tigers, what some people even call American tigers, or generic tigers, which don't have any conservation value. They represent no wild population. And that is what has incentivized the mass breeding of generic tigers.
So if you're a zoo that is involved in the conservation effort and you want to have on display, you know, an authentic Bengal tiger that is, you know, is part of an endangered population, then you fall under the U.S. Endangered Species Act's restrictions and regulations. But if you're just a person who really loves big cats and wants to have a lot of tiger cubs that people can pet, you could get out from underneath the Endangered Species Act by just making sure that all those tigers that you are breeding and that you are raising are mutts, effectively. They're generic, as you're saying.
So here's the thing, and this is where it gets, even with tiger experts in the scientific community get a little bit confused sometimes, because all tigers, even when the generic tiger loophole existed, all tigers, even the generic tigers were protected from harm under the Endangered Species Act. So like Joe Exotic, one of the things he was convicted for was shooting tigers, and they were all generic. Mm. So this is a level of protection that's always existed.
Okay.
The only thing that didn't exist was almost like an administrative paperwork registration requirement that the Fish and Wildlife Service said, we're going to step back from looking at as much of the oversight of these transfers that are happening. And that's why it became a lot easier for big cat exhibitors to transfer these cats across state lines without seeking permission from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
To transfer, you mean like put them on a truck and go on the road as a traveling petting zoo or a traveling circus?
To sell them.
Oh, to sell. Okay. Yeah. Which then created, so today, do we have any idea how many generic tigers are currently out there in the United States that are privately owned or being bred or sold or traded or whatever?
So in 2016, I published an article, and for that article, I did some research into how many tigers there are, and it's impossible to get an accurate count because of the loopholes in existing law and also the patchwork of state laws. I mean, we have four states that don't even have any law at all. Literally, if you live in Nevada, Wisconsin, North Carolina, or Alabama, you might have to get a license for your dog, but there's nothing that's required to own a tiger. So this is the current, you know, lack of oversight that has really created so much of this problem.
So, but states and cities can implement their own rules and regulations, their own laws.
Absolutely.
Okay. And will those laws trump whatever lax rules or enforcement might exist on the federal level?
Yeah, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, even in the Federal Animal Welfare Act, it actually encourages localities and states to enact their own more exacting regulations, because the Animal Welfare Act is just bare minimum standards. Mm. So yeah, states can and should get involved and do the right thing for public safety and animal welfare by prohibiting the private ownership. So when I was researching, going back to the numbers that there are only about 250 purebred tigers in the United States, and that's in our AZA accredited zoos in their managed breeding programs.
Okay.
So they're Malayan, Sumatran, Amur tigers. The AZA made an announcement in 2011 that its goal was to reduce the population of generic tigers in the United States to zero. And that's reflective of U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service opinion that they lack conservation as well. So then I did, through a FOIA request, a Freedom of Information Act request, I got some information from the U.S. Department of Agriculture about all the facilities that have tigers in their inventories. And the total number was around 1,500. That would include only the exhibitors, though. So that's only your circuses, roadside zoos like Joe Exotic, like the Cub bottle feeding places. That would include your accredited sanctuaries. That would also include your accredited zoological parks, like the San Diego Zoo. That number was representative with that 1,500 number. Now, we have no way of knowing how many pets are being kept, mm-hmm. and that's a huge issue.
So surely thousands. I mean, if there are over 1,000 zoos, you have to assume that, or these like sort of accredited institutions, you have to assume they have at least one tiger.
The number of pets, people aren't, you know, the USDA does not require you to get a license. Have a tiger as a pet. So without meaningful oversight on the state or federal level, and because tigers as pets is the dumping ground for roadside zoos, once the animals get too big and too dangerous and also are no longer legal to be handled by the public, that's where they go. They get dumped into the pet trade. So you will see roadside zoos advocating for people to be able to buy tigers as pets, because they need to get rid of them somewhere once they're older than 12 weeks old.
Mm. 12 weeks old is, what is that threshold? What's the significance of 12 weeks old?
So the U.S. Department of Agriculture, in its interpretation of the Animal Welfare Act safe handling regulations, has really defied all animal husbandry, animal welfare, and zoological experts by allowing for roadside zoos to offer cub bottle feeding with the public. And these cubs are forcibly ripped away from their mothers at birth to be habituated to human contact while they're still immunocompromised. They're forced into up to 60 sessions a day, photo ops, swim with tigers, you name it, And they're extremely lucrative for these exhibitors who charge anywhere from, you know, $50 to sometimes thousands of dollars per session. However, USDA interprets the window to be only from 8 weeks of age to approximately 12 weeks of age. So when they age out and when they are subject to potential citation by the USDA for allowing an animal, an apex predator, who's too big and too dangerous to be in contact with the public, then all they are is a safety risk and a financial drain. It costs $10,000 a year just to feed a tiger. So that's when these cats get dumped in other roadside facilities. That's when they get dumped into the exotic pet trade. And as we saw with Joe Exotic, sometimes they just get shot in the head.
What is the other loophole that you mentioned? We talked about the generic tiger loophole where as long as you're selling and transporting a generic tiger, so just a mix, not a purebred, you are going to be subject to less oversight. What's the other loophole?
And thankfully, that particular generic tiger loophole was closed in 2016. But however, because, like you said, for 18 years, it existed, that was enough time for the rapid breeding to happen. And all these cats just fall into a gigantic black hole. The other loophole is in the Federal Animal Welfare Act regulations. The Animal Welfare Act establishes really bare minimum standards. I think a lot of people would be shocked to know that, you know, the federal regulations, if a facility says, well, we're federally licensed and inspected, they're inspected once a year to make sure that they have things like water, food, and that tigers have enough room to basically stand up, turn around, and lie down. These are not species-specific regulations. The handling regulation requires for cubs to only be handled in ways that are consistent with their good welfare. However, the USDA, rather than actually recognizing that it is fundamentally impossible to allow cub petting and provide for a cub's welfare simultaneously, allows for this lucrative cub handling and cub photo op and bottle feeding business to persist.
It's harmful. So it's bad for tiger cubs to get petted by people.
When you take a tiger away from his or her mother immediately at birth, for the people who saw Tiger King, they saw a neonate, a just born tiger being torn through a cyclone fence. That is psychologically damaging to the mother because her life only consists of being bred and having her babies removed from her. She's just a breeder. So the cruelty is really on both sides of the coin. So it's the mother tiger who has a miserable existence her entire life. And then the cubs who are subjected to excessive public handling, frequently abusive training techniques like withholding water to get them to submit till they have this learned helplessness, their reliance upon their captors. Cats are supposed to sleep up to 20 hours a day. These cubs should be in a dark area with their mothers. In the wild, tigers stay with their mothers for the first 2 years of their lives, being passed around to members of the public who don't know how to handle a tiger cub. They're risking aspiration pneumonia when have those bottles jammed down their throats all day long. Some of these tigers, people walk away saying, oh, that cat looked like she was drugged. Maybe they're drugged, but they may just be so listless from being forced into a life that is fundamentally the opposite of what a big cat needs.
And the loophole here is that for whatever reason, the USDA in its animal welfare rules says you can let people pay to pet a cub between 8 and 12 weeks of age. So this 4-week window, which creates this huge incentive why would you ever let your tiger cub sleep if you can keep on, you know, putting it in front of people at $50 a pop to pet the thing? Yeah, the incentive, the financial incentive is just gigantic to maximize on those four weeks. And then what happened?
Rather than protecting animals as they are statutorily mandated to do, they're protecting the industry.
Okay.
And just a footnote on that, this isn't just my opinion. The USDA's own internal auditing department, the OIG, Office of the Inspector General, has repeatedly found that the animal care inspectors are failing to enforce the Animal Welfare Act and failing to do their jobs. So this is well documented within the agency itself.
Okay. I think you also said early on, Professor Nassar, that it is illegal to kill a tiger in the U.S. Is that right?
That's a criminal violation of the Endangered Species Act. Yes.
Okay. Even if it's a generic tiger, not a purebred.
Even if it's a generic tiger. Okay. Yes. Even if it's a generic tiger.
So then, because there has been this motivation, this huge lucrative opportunity for tiger cubs, tigers grow up, and at some point they will no longer be cubs, and you can't legally have them in petting zoos. And so then what does the law or the regulation allow for at that point? Because apparently euthanizing the tigers is not legal.
Yeah, I mean, it still happens. But a lot of the times they just get dumped into the pet trade. And what happens is, like, we saw this with the prosecution of Joe Exotic was based on, you know, lying about the purchase and sale of tigers that he had marked as donations. You know, I've seen a situation, just to give an example of what's par for the course with these exhibitors once they're done with cats. I've seen one particular exhibitor say that he donated two tigers to a magician who said that he donated $1,500 to the exhibitor to support tiger conservation in the same month. So they sold each other.
He sold them the tigers. Is it legal?
Right. He sold them the
tigers. I thought
that
was legal.
And it's illegal without seeking a permit from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. You have to get a permit. They know they would never get a permit, because in order to get a permit to purchase or sell a tiger, you have to show that the underlying reason you're seeking the permit supports conservation of this species. And these guys, they know, bottle feeding a tiger for photo ops, taking selfies for dating profiles, and using big cats in magic shows has no relationship to saving big cats in the wild.
It doesn't. Having a close-up encounter with a majestic animal like that, you don't think causes people to be more motivated to want to support the conservation of these endangered species?
Real conservation doesn't entail exploitation on any level. Moreover, all of the studies and all of the surveys that have been done and research that's been done on the impact of up-close encounters with endangered animals has actually suggested that it harms legitimate conservation initiatives, because when you're able to go to a strip mall to have your photo taken with a tiger, it sends this misperception that these animals are plentiful enough for us to just use them for our whims. There's a disconnect for people who feel like, if I can just go have a photo taken with a tiger, surely they can't be that imperiled in the wild. Oh. The existing data suggests the exact opposite. Moreover, all these cats who are being bred have no conservation value. You're not getting a representation of an animal who even exists in the wild. You're not getting a representation of behavior that exists in the wild. There's no education value. There's no conservation value, and it's fundamentally inhumane.
Carney Ann Nassar is a professor of law at Michigan State University, where she directs the Animal Welfare Clinic. Thanks a lot for your time. I appreciate it, Professor Nassar.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for joining me today, everyone. I hope you got some value from that content. Don't forget to share. And before I let you go, I just have to remind you, if you haven't already, to contact your federal legislators here in the United States and ask them to co-sponsor the Big Cat Public Safety Act. If you care about this issue, if you want to put an end to the cycle of abuse and exploitation and public endangerment that these roadside zoos present, then be sure you just ping your federal legislators and let them know that you want them to co-sponsor the Big Cat Public Safety Act. So, you know, this issue is just one of many that deserve our attention. And part of the reason that I have produced fewer podcast episodes in the month of June is because I have been redirecting my advocacy efforts for civil rights issues that are so important for us to all be invested in and participating in right now. But I do believe we can all care about more than one issue at a time. And part of the way that we can all help end the cycle of abuse and exploitation of big cats in the United States is to just vote with our wallets and never participate or pay to go to one of these roadside zoos, never pay to have our photo taken with a big cat, never go to an entertainment act like a circus or a magic show that uses big cats. So with that, I'm going to wish you a wonderful rest of your week, and I look forward to meeting you back here next time on another episode of Tiger Talk.